Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to In Conversation, a DubLab podcast where each week we will bring you interviews from the DubLab radio archives.
You're listening to Celsius Drop on DubLab.com. I'm Frosty, and that was Stebbini's theme from African Head Charge from the debut album My Life in a Hole in the Ground from 1981. And I am absolutely overjoyed to have Banjo Ayabingi Noah here on the line. How are you?
Yeah, man. Everything Irie, I'm blessed. You know, we give thanks for life and everything that Jah has given us. Yes, I.
It is a blessing indeed to have you here, and you've blessed the world with so much music that that means so much that I'm personally a fan of, and that has really resonated around the world with people with open minds, open souls, open hearts. And so, thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. Thank you, too. Thank everyone who love Wagwan, you know. I just feel humble, you know, to know that people like what we've been doing over the years, you know. Yes.
Wonderful.
And that's his greatest feeling.
Well, that spirit comes through in the music. The joy comes through in the music. And we feel that you're enjoying it and that you're offering this to the world from a really deep place. And so definitely resonates in the sound. African Head Charge Project has been almost 40 years. The collaboration with Adrian Sherwood and so many players over the years. But I'd like to go back even further. We'll play today. We're going to play some influences, some music that you've assembled for us. We'll also play some of your favorite African Head Charge songs. But I want to go further back. You're originally from Jamaica. Clarendon?
Clarendon, yes.
Tell us a bit about Clarendon and your kind of background and how music was part of that upbringing and part of your DNA.
Yeah, you see, in when I was a youth, you know, in Jamaica, in Clarendon, we don't have television or radio or anything like that, you know. So whenever there's anything happening, like the Poker Church, you know, it's a spiritual church where people go for healing and things like that. As a child, I used to go to those places, just go there because we love the drumming and the chanting that was going on. You know, even sometimes our parents sometimes didn't want us to go to those places.
Why not?
You know, I don't know, because they're like my mom, well, she was more of a Christian person.
Sure.
You know, more into Christianity, you know. But a different side of the family are into different things. So as a youth, yes, I'll go to a church. And my grandmother, she was a Rasta queen in Clarendon. Her name is Nana Bonchi. My grandmother's younger sister.
Yeah.
So I always like going there too, where they teach me how to play the poker drums and the Nyabingi drums and so forth.
When you went to the church, what drew you to that space, and what were you feeling being in the church, hearing the drums?
Well, I don't know. I tell you the truth, I just don't know. I think at first I went there because I loved the drumming, and you know, my grandmother, who was a Rasta queen in the whole of Clarendon, she loved me, and I have a love for her too, and her husband and all the people I'm around. What they did with their land, their portion of the land, they turned that place into a Rasta camp. Mm-hmm. Right, and we have one of the leaders there. His name is the Reverend Claudius Henry. You can Google that name, and you get to find out about that person. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, I mean, the first Rasta preacher was a man called Howell. Yeah. Then after that, you have different people. Then later, you get this man called Reverend Claudius Henry. You know, who was one of those Rasta who believes in, you know, we are coming together and sort out our own problems. He came as like repairer of the breach, come to repair the damage that's done to us mentally, spiritually, and physically. That was what his thing was all about. Even though me as a youth, I didn't really understand or overstand a whole thing about going, you know?
Yeah.
But I just go there through the drumming and the love and the food as well and everything. And I remember my mother, she didn't really like me going there. You know, you have families, some is Catholic, some is Christian, some is all kind of thing. But somehow I was drawn to the Poker Church, you know, and then I was also drawn to the Nyabingi. And through that now, in fact, they used to see me as a bad boy. I was like the bad boy in the family, because I'm going to a place where the people are smoking weed, people are chanting, and all kind of thing. But no matter how much they'll beat me, I will still be going there. Even when they send me to Kingston, or send me to Mokot, Thamstone, Victoria, anywhere they send me, go, I'll run away and come back there. For some reason, I was enjoying myself there. And the thing about the Rasta, you know, in those days, I'm talking about the 50s and that, right? A lot of people were scared of them, you know? But somehow I go amongst them, and they, because I see them as my family through my grandmother and everybody. And they were treating me good, food to eat and so. And they start teaching me a lot of things. And that's one of the reasons why I see I'm here in Africa for the last 22, 3 years. I go and come, I'm always there. It's because of what they've been teaching me all about Africa and things like that. And me, Vernie, and Howen, the three youths, like we are, say, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, children in those times, we play the drums before the elders come, like Bongo Black and even Ras Michael. All the top drummers used to come there. Count Ozzy was the master. Yes. He used to come there, and it's like he's doing like a workshop with us children, you know. And somehow they chose me to play the lead, the kettle drum, and teach me all the chanting and all that kind of thing. So we used to go places and play. They used to send us to Maypen, and in those days it was the Clarendonians were the top youth singer in those days, you know, Freddie McGregor, because you know he's from Clarendon as well, yeah, Freddie McGregor, and so he was the number one. But we used to go and sing not commercial song. We used to sing the song that they teach us,
yeah,
like you know, hear the voice of the Rasta man, say Babylon, your throne gone down. You know, we've been chanting those songs long, long, long time, even before Bob come and make it popular, or whatever. And No Night in Zion and all kind of chant that they teach us. And we used to go and perform those things. And it was really popular with a lot of people out there. So maybe that's why the elders didn't do it. They sent us as youth to do it. You know what I mean? 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old. We used to go and do that. And that's when I remember meeting like this Catalite, Danjoman, and all those people, you know. But I didn't think I have a career in this thing. That just happened by, I don't know how it happened. I came to London and I started moving some musicians and it happened. I wasn't thinking that the drumming that I learned and the chanting that I learned was going to come to anything, because I wasn't even looking at it as a career.
What brought you to London? When did you move to London?
My dad came to London, and then he sent for my mom, and then they started sending for my brothers and my sisters and myself.
And was it important for you to then seek the community that you had become very attached to in Jamaica, to, you know, with the Rasta community, to be able to stay rooted in that culture?
In fact, I ran away. When I heard that they were sending for me, they couldn't find me. You know, I ran away. I'm talking about from, say, 11-year-old, you know, I didn't go to school again. I just ran away. And this time I went to live in Argustown, in Kingston, a place called Bedward Crescent in Argustown, yeah? And I ran away. They couldn't find me. That's the reason why I'm the last one of my brothers and sisters to actually come to England, because they couldn't find me.
So they actually left. They left, and you were still there. You were in Augustown after they had already gone to London.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I just run away. I'm sleeping here, there, and whatever. It's one of my auntie who I really love, who really came and took me back to Clarendon as well, and, you know, cut my dreadlocks off and say, come, you're going to England. And then it's like I had a choice. It's either come here or I go to the Boys Town School. You know, they have a school where bad boys go to. So it's either go to that school, Boys Town School, or I come to England. And I just come to England. Yeah.
And what was your thought when you got to England? And did you seek a community that you felt at home in? And did you start to... You know, because there is a large Jamaican population that did move to England, and music that was brewing up, obviously. Was it something you immediately sought out?
Not really. What happened is, I used to get myself in a lot of trouble, right? You know, I went to Boston and detention, you know, for young people.
Yeah.
You understand? But what happened is, when I came out, they sent me to live in a place in London, right? Like the halfway house. That time I was my girlfriend. You know, I started living with no woman from when I was about 17, 18. I started even having children. Mm-hmm. So they sent us to live in Hackney, in Nesbitt House. And while I was there, there was a singer live upstairs. His name is Eddie Talbot. And downstairs, there's a drummer downstairs, Ruben. And Eddie Talbot used to sing in a band called The Undivided. And The Undivided... they were the top reggae band in England in those days. You know, even Bob Marley was singing with them, and Rico was a part of them, and all these top people. And then the other band was called In Brackets, and they were backing up people like Dandy Livingstone, and a lot of there was a backing band for a lot of people, you know. So I'm living in this place, and I'm starting to be friendly with the singer upstairs and with the drummer, Ruben, downstairs. So somehow, I used to go with them like a roadie. I used to help them out, lift the knees of and that. And then one day I went to the rehearsal, me and Ruben, just go burn some ganja and thing, you know? Because in those days, we used to get some good weed, right? Mm-hmm. And I see the Congos in the rehearsal room, and sometimes I just feel like go on it, you know, and I start go on it, and I just start to play it, and then Ruben go on the drum and start to tickle the drum, and then we start to play, and then by we playing, the rest of the band start to come in, and it's like everybody was telling me they like what I was doing, and so the drummer, the guy who owns the Congo drum, his name is Harold, right? Mm-hmm. He showed me how to buy my own drums. Mm-hmm. And then that changed my life, really, because I didn't know what, you know, because I didn't really go to school.
Yeah.
And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do in my life, you know, until the day when I saw the drums, I went on it and played on it. And then I find out people, when they're coming from Jamaica, Prince Farai, Dee Perry, a lot of people wanted me to work with them. Sometimes I lost my drum. People stole all this and that. And Dillinger manager just said, go and buy it. And you can, you know, so they were just buying the drums for me. And I used to go on tour with them. And then after the tour, I found out they take the money out for the drums. And I still just have a little leaf still. But I was still happy because I had the drums and the percussion to carry on working. And I think one of the good things happened is that when a drummer I used to work with, his name is Charlie Fox. must come. He was one of the original drummer for Creation Rebel, and he was also working with a band called Freedom Fighter. So really, I was with Freedom Fighter. So when Charlie started to go back to work with this band, Freedom Creation Rebel, that was produced by Adrian, and they took me there, and they also liked what I was doing because I was bringing a different type of drumming there. Because I wasn't just into the kind of drumming that they do. I was studying African drumming. You know, what Fela Kuti was doing, what Asibisa was doing, what Bungus Maria was doing, all these other people. I decided, well, I didn't learn a trade. I didn't learn nothing. So I took the drums as, it's like I'm in a university now. I'm going to spend time every day studying this drumming and so forth. So that, you know, so when I went with Creation Rebel, that's why one of the album that they do is called Jankuno. Jankuno, because Jankuno is a festival kind of thing. The place.
Yeah.
It's kind of drumming and things. So, and then somehow I'll start getting on with Adrian. So when the band kind of cool out after Prince Farai passed, me and Adrian went in, we was always going in the studio. Sometimes just me and Adrian alone. That's why the first album is called My Life in the Hole in the Ground. Because the studio was underground in a place called Berry Street in London, right? Underground. So we used to spend days and days in there. Like, because I think you used to get it for the nighttime, which is very cheap. You know what I mean? Very, very cheap compared to if you used to use it in the day. So we used to go in there and spend the whole night in there. And sometimes we go in there, we don't even know what we're going there to do. We never really plan nothing. Adrian just turn all the machines on. My percussions is there. And I start to play something. I just start to play something. And then after playing something, I just play something on top of that. And I play something on top of that. You know, so it will sound like a lot of drummer playing all those things. But it's me alone doing everything. Adrian was just, as soon as I do one, just do another one. And then there was another one. So in one track, I might even play about 8 different types of drum on it, or even more, you know? And that's how the whole thing started, you know, with the drums. That time, I wasn't really concentrated so much on the voice. It's just building drums. And then after we build drums, and we start adding bass and different things on it. We never really went in the studio like we're doing now. And later on, sometimes we start to plan things. You know what I mean? I think, but in these days, no plan. We just go in the studio. Adrian turn the machine on, and the drums are there. Mic is there, and we just start playing.
We're gonna hear some of the fruits of that in just a little bit. Some of the gems from the Deep African Head Charge catalog. But before we do, I actually would love to play some of the music you've put together, that some of the influences, some of the sounds that represent the music that's in your ears as a listener and lover of sound. You've put together a great list of songs for us. Then we'll share some of your picks from the African Head Charge catalog. But yeah, we've got up first, you've put together a list. You've got Junior Biles up first with Fade Away, and you've got several incredible songs we're going to flow into. Anything you want people to know about your kind of listening life and what this music means to you as a musician, but also just a human who lives a life in sound?
Music is life, and is especially the music that we are playing from Jamaica and the influence that it has on the whole world. It is gospel. If you listen to reggae music playing, you don't need to go to church again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just by listening to it, listen to what Baba's doing, Bonnie Peter, Junior Biles, all these great artists, you know. When you listen to them, that means you don't need to go anywhere. Even it's like education, mentally and spiritually and physically education, you know. And I think that's what got into me as a person who did really go to school. You know, I said leave school at 11. But because I'm listening to these people, it's like a university in itself, you know. And in fact, I used to start thinking like that because I was on the dole. You know what I mean by the dole?
Yeah.
Like, you're not working, so you go and sign on until you get a job. When I was signing on, I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm signing on, but I'm in university. You know what I mean?
And you were hearing this Nyabingi drumming, the chanting, and more of the spiritual Rastafarian music you heard in Jamaica. There were segments of the Jamaican population who was shunning this, even your parents, you know, kind of
That's
holding
right.
that back. But music is this vessel through which something deep can travel. And this idea of the Rastafarian music, even the specific types of drumming and these things that people might not have understood in that pure level within the church, it was making it and traveling the world and moving through the music that also was released commercially. So this coexistence of the spiritual but the commercial, and these things can live together, and music can really deeply influence people. So we're excited to hear these influences and things that you love as a listener of music from Jamaica. Should we float into this, and then we'll come back and talk just a bit more about some African head charge experimentation in the studio?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Beautiful.
Yes. All right.
We've got Banjo Ayabingi Noah of African Head Charge here on the line, beaming in from Ghana. It's dublab.com. Stay tuned.
Of only vanity and no love for humanity shall fade away, fade away. He who checks for only wealth and not for his physical health shall fade away, fade away. Though some believe in diamonds and pearl and feel like they're on top of the world, they shall fade away.
Dublab.com. It's Celsius Drop. I'm Frosty, and we've got Banjo Ayabingi Noah here on the line of African Head Charge. We've just heard a selection of music that he has put together to bless our ears. We just heard a tune from Noah, House of Dread, Wicked Kingdom, and much more music that means so much to Banjo, and hope that you've all enjoyed it as much as I have too. Thank you for sharing those sounds.
Blessed, blessed.
You were talking a bit about this kind of experimentation with Adrian Sherwood as you were creating the blueprints of African Head Charge, which now is almost a 40-year relationship through sound.
You see, what happened? The one reason why I got close with Adrian, and I took him like a brother, and I think I've influenced him a lot in not just in music, but a lot of things, mm-hmm. even cooking and all kind of thing. You know what I mean? He's busy now, but we're moving together as friends as well. He was the only person that was really willing to listen to what I wanted to do as a drummer. Because, you know, I'm playing the pukka drums. I'm playing the Nyabingi drums. And in that time, nobody wanted to have it. In London, seriously, if you listen to most music, nobody. I used to play on people's songs, and they used to just rub it off, delete it. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So when I find this person like what I'm trying to do, the kind of drumming that that influenced me, the drumming that I like, that's the reason why I more or less just stick with him, because he liked what I was doing. You know, and we didn't have to think. He just set it up. I just start playing, and everything that I would touch on the drum, he'll record it. He'll keep it. He just take everything. Even if I'm sound checking, you know, testing, he'll record everything. And that's how he was. You know, and he's still the same. He hasn't changed. You know what I mean? If we're going to studio with Adrian, and okay, we're doing something, he just record it. You know, so because sometimes when you're drumming. And you play without him thinking. It's just happening naturally. It's like it's not even me doing it. It's something inside me doing it, because I didn't really plan it. We just go in there and we find a hand playing something, and it sounds really good. Yeah, and you get excited, and we get excited. And through the excitement that we felt, it's like it's just laughter and fun in it to you know, just the two of us in there, and we just keep doing it. You know, so that's why I like about Adrian, with my career as with African Head Charge. You know, he accepted what I wanted to do as a drummer. Most people they didn't want it. The poker drums and the Nyabingi drums, it wasn't really accepted in London in the '80s. It wasn't.
He accepted, but he also accepted. It seems like he amplified it. He got to the root and the core of what really was important to you, the drumming and the deep tradition of the drumming, and put it to the front.
And then his contribution take it on another thing as well. You know what I mean? So it's like his contribution and what I was doing. That's what really put the whole thing together on a recording. And we're still doing it.
Also, you know, a reflection not only of, you know, the Nyabingi drumming, but also the Nyabingi drumming and the culture's connection to Africa. Of course, you know, the name African Head Charge says a lot. So this forward thinking, you know, this sort of thing, but it's looking forward and also looking backwards and connecting heritage to the future. And so all of your studies, as you mentioned, your university of music and drumming and rhythms was really important to understand African drumming. We're talking right now, we're communicating across the ocean. You're in Ghana. So that putting the roots from Africa in the music, was that also part of a kind of conversation with Adrian and an intention to bring that aspect of it to the surface?
Well, at that time, we never really talk about it.
Yeah, that's the best music. Yeah, you just flow into it. Yeah,
We just go in and we just start doing it. We never sit and say, "Oh, we're gonna do this."
Of course,
or whatever,
yeah.
Whatever. You know, you just because what was happening, it was already inside me. Those drumming was there. All right, I started to study and learn to do more because I decided, no, this is what I want to do, drumming. So I need to go for audition with different bands sometimes. Sometimes I'm playing in a band and they're playing all Latin music. Some band they're playing jazz music. So I decided to study those things as well, just to get work, to earn some money to look after, you know. So we go and play in pubs. And we used to use a paper called The Melody Maker. You know, it comes out every Thursday. So I used to buy it and look. And then you see they're looking for a Congo player or a percussionist.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll go and sometimes I'll get the work. And sometimes the work is like some people on stage dancing or performing or whatever they're doing. And you have to play the drums that suit the movement that they are doing. You know, so I was like behind the screen, just watching the people. And if they put their foot down, then I go broop. And if they do certain movement, then I play with whatever movement they're doing, you know. And that was just like hustling, really. When I say hustling, just to make some money, you know what I mean?
And picking that's what up, I was doing picking up that. Skills and being fluid, being able to work within many different forms and to energetically connect to a lot of people through different sounds is important. You also had the you know, this group of people that were working with Adrian and Anyu Sound, and it was this blend. It seems like the appreciation for the roots, but also a deep appreciation for experimentation and being very open with sound, not thinking about rules. You know, thinking of something that's more boundless and infinite in sound. Was that and in Jamaica? You know, the Lee Scratch Perry and everybody who was also, you know, really forward thinking and expanding the possibility of sound through experimentation, through dubbing and echoing, you know, all of these things where technology meets something deeper and meets something spiritual and musical and creative. How did it feel to kind of be around, you know, a group of people that were also open in that way as far as experimenting?
Well, I mean, people like Lee Perry and people like Mad Professor, you know, being around them, apart from Adrian. And now I'm doing something to this guy called Gaudi. But before that, when people like Lee Perry, I mean, he's there's nobody like him. You know, there's no one like him.
This is true.
It's a magic. It's somehow, it's just magic. With Lee Perry, it's just magic, you know. Mad Professor, he's a genius because he knows everything about studio.
Yep.
He can build a studio from scratch, I mean, Lee Perry used to do that as well. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but Lee, but Mad Professor at the moment, he can just go into a studio, rearrange it and get different sounds and
absolutely
all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Meeting Fela was another great thing for me too.
Oh my goodness.
You know, because before Fela, he was staying in this cottage, this drummer, Ginger Baker, yes. So he used to stay in Ginger Baker house. So one of the African band I used to play, because there's a band came from Africa that was supporting Fela. And they, one of their drummer didn't make it, yeah? Mm-hmm. So they start to audition for a Congo player. And I saw it in the Melody Maker. And I went to the, and I was surprised I got the job. I got the job, you know, to play in that band. I was the only person there who was from Jamaica. Everybody was from Nigeria, you know. And I become close with Sonny Akpan. Mm-hmm. He was, you see some of my live shows, Sonny's on it, yeah? And there's a guy called Chike. And they took me to where Fela was staying in Ginger Baker house. And you know what I mean? Fella, I'm loving herbs and thing. And that time we have some good red beer that come in from Jum Dong, you know? So I used to go down there. And this fella gave me the name Bonjo, you know?
Wow, amazing.
You know the name Bonjo? His fella Kuti actually called me that name. And at first I didn't like the name, but I couldn't get rid of it.
Why do you think he gave it to you? Did he explain?
He said I look like somebody in Nigeria who's got that name. That's what he said. So when he looked, he said, Bonjo. He was coming down from upstairs and I was sitting downstairs. And he said, hey, Bonjo. And then all of the guys in the band start calling me that name. You know what I mean? So that's why I had that name to my name.
It just spread from there. Amazing.
Yes. and that was it, you know. So, you know, being around those people, I feel good that I've been around. You know, I feel humbled and honored that I've been with such great people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, I just thought, wow. Sometimes I'm pinching myself. Look, I'm sitting with all these great people and I'm doing things that they appreciate. You know what I mean? I'm doing things that they love what I'm doing. So it makes me feel so great. And I just feel good. It's nothing to do with money or anything like that. It's just because of these great people hear what I'm doing and love it. I'm talking about people like Prince Farah as well.
Yeah.
You know, and he won't go anywhere without me playing the drums for him. He like the Nabingi drums that I'm doing for him. Culture, Burning Spear, all these people, they just like what I was doing. You know, and that, because of that, it makes me feel really good. Because I wasn't really playing professionally when I was in Jamaica. It's only when I came to London, came out of Boston and started moving with these people, that's when I just started. And then from there I didn't know where it's going to end up. You know what I mean? I just find that all different kind of people was asking me to come and work with them. Different groups, different producers, different people. You know, and I remember even before that, when I'm playing, as I said, they wouldn't have it. They'd rub it off. They didn't like, because I'm playing some jungle style kind of drumming on the reggae beat, and nobody was doing that. You understand? We're playing, imagine that you have a certain kind of beat where they're playing the reggae. But I didn't really decide. I just found myself doing that, just playing the poker drumming and the Nabingi drumming on the reggae beat, which nobody was doing it at that time. No, not one person was doing it.
Well, the jungle vibe, we've got Jungle Law lined up right here from a churchical chant of the Ayabingi African head charge. And then we'll hear a selection of music that you've put together to share some of your favorite African head charge pieces. I mean, this is since 1981, so it's a large catalog. A lot of it is being reissued on vinyl, and so people can bring this into their homes, their lives, and this music is very influential and very deep music. So let's hear some African head charge tunes. We've got Bonjo, Ayabingi, Noah on the line here. It's dublab.com. Here comes Jungle Law. heard a selection of African Head Charge songs, one of my favorite all-time musical projects, and really, really honored and blessed to have Banjo Ayabingi Noah here on the line. He and Adrian Sherwood, almost 40 years ago, creating African Head Charge, bringing something really mystical, deep, spiritual, rhythmic, and powerful to the world. Thank you so much for all of this incredible music, Banjo.
Yeah, thank you too. Thank you. And I'm humbled to know that you love it. You know what I mean? You know, I feel it's like cooking some food, right? Mm. And eating it and sharing it and see, look at the people and see that they're enjoying it.
Food and music are deeply connected and very, they're both reflections of the soul and kind of like these direct channels into culture. Out of curiosity, if you were to cook, you know, a meal for our audience now that was reflective of the African Head Charge vibe and sound and mission, out of curiosity, what would you serve up?
Well, I'll serve Ital's food, right? Mm-hmm. Ital. Most probably, if I wasn't doing music full-time, maybe I'd have been a cook full-time. Mm-hmm. You know, because I used to cook food in the Rasta house. And as I said, I love cooking.
What's a favorite dish? What would you want to serve?
Well, I like rice and peas, right? Mm-hmm. I love rice and peas. And then I have the Ital stew with it. Mm. Sometimes when the band is sound checking, you know, they give me everything I want, I'm cooking.
Beautiful.
Well, the band is sound check until they set up all the equipment. I just give me some pattern, give me the thing that we want. I enjoy doing it too. Mm.
You've nourished our ears, you've nourished our souls, and you also have that strong ability to nourish our bellies as well. And people can pick up this soundtrack for deep culture and travel through sound with African Head Charge. So many reissues flowing out to the world on vinyl and incredible music that really is something unique in this world.
Drumming, for me, I look at drumming as a high thing. Because we used to go around to hospitals, right? Me and a friend called Keith Jones, because his wife was a nurse. And we used to play for the sick people. Even some people that are going to die. We used to study some songs from the 20s for them and play to make them feel airy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In these hospitals. And there was a man in there, and he I don't know if he was in a coma. I think he was in a coma or something like that. And then I just started to play some poker drums and the guy started to move his toes. Wow. And the doctor said they've been trying to get this man to move something. And I just come in there with the drum, boom, 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 the drums. And the man just started to move his toe.
Amazing.
You know what I mean? And then that's when I started to look at the drum, not just as an instrument, but it's something special. There's something special about drum, especially if you're playing it with that spiritual vibe. Not looking at money, not looking at nothing, just doing it. You know, and sometimes when you play certain drums, you can feel the ancestors around you. Hmm. You know what I mean? Sometimes you could be playing by yourself, practicing, and then you can feel the ancestors around you. Hmm. So the drumming to me is a very spiritual thing. It's not just physical. It's a very spiritual thing. The ancestors are with us. It's like we draw the ancestors to us. Mm. You know, a lot of people not understand that, know that, but I know it does.
Music is medicine. Music's medicine and deeply connective. Yes. And absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing. And Banjo Ai, brilliant light and sound. Thank you for bringing this to us here on Dub Lab.
And love, you know, and more Isis, more... For me, we have to enjoy life. You know, life is something when you wake up in the morning, we have to say, oh, thank you, Father, for another day and for another day and enjoy life and get rid of stress. You know, we're not into stress. Mm. It's simple. Giving Jah thanks and praise. Mm. That's all. Just give Jah thanks and praise. Bless it.
In Conversation was produced by Dublab, a nonprofit radio station broadcasting live from Los Angeles since 1999. Sound editing and theme song by Matea Bain. For more programming, visit dublab.com. And thank you for listening.